Last time we were in the 29th chapter of Isaiah, and we got down to the 17th verse. He's speaking here of the fact that the people of Judea had been unfaithful to him. They had drawn near to him with their mouth and with their lips. They honored him, but they removed their heart far from him. And they were following after the commandments of men. And in verse 16 he says, "Surely your turning of things upside down shall be esteemed as the potter's clay." That is the fact that they had completely reversed or upset God's order for them. Would be just like the potter's clay telling the potter that it didn't know how to make them, or that it had created them wrong, or that it should let the potter be the one to decide how, rather let the clay decide how it should be created. So he said, "It shall be esteemed as the potter's clay, for shall the work say of him that made it, he made me not? Or shall the thing framed say of him that framed it, he had no understanding?" And really, when we understand the fact that we are in the hands of God just like the potter's clay is in the hands of the potter. And when God has made us, and he also has made things for us, and he intends for us to function in a certain way and to use the things that he's made for us in a certain way. But when we change the use of it, or when we ignore his way, or we take up some different method that we were never created for or intended for, it's the same as if we turned to our Creator and said, "Well, you don't have any understanding. You don't know what you're doing. You didn't make me after all." And that's what he's comparing this to. You know, last time we read from Romans 19, 20 and 21, a passage about the fact that he is the creator of the various vessels. And so in verse 17, now this is where we're beginning tonight. "Is it not yet a very little while, and Lebanon shall be turned into a fruitful field, and the fruitful field shall be esteemed as a forest?" Now this phrase, "Lebanon shall be turned into a fruitful field," is a proverbial saying. Lebanon was up to the north, you know, and Lebanon was noted as an area that was not given to being fruitful. It was not an agricultural area. It was not cultivated. It was much more barren than that, whereas the areas around Palestine were fruitful areas. And so the proverbial phrase then, that Lebanon's going to be turned into a fruitful field, or Lebanon's going to be made like Carmel, like Mount Carmel, would mean that a vast change is going to be undergone. And that's kind of like our saying today that when it snows in July, it'd be a big change for it to be snowing in July. And so it was considered to be a big change for Lebanon to be turned into a fruitful field. But he says, "Is it not yet a very little while, and Lebanon shall be turned into a fruitful field?" That is, there's going to be some great changes made. Excuse me. "And the fruitful field shall be esteemed as a forest." That is, the thing that is now fruitful is going to be made like Lebanon. It's just going to be grown up like a forest. And what he is probably saying here is that there are going to be some vast changes occur in my people. That which now seems to be a forest and is not a fruitful field at all is going to become fruitful, and that which now is the fruitful field is going to become like a forest. He's indicating some changes among his people, and these changes would be probably after the captivity, and when the people got back to Jerusalem and rebuilt the city and rebuilt the temple. But the greater fulfillment of these changes is probably going to be in the time of the Messiah. That is, the time that we're living in now, the Christian age, after the Savior has come and established the church. But he proceeds now to give some of the changes that will occur at that time. Verse 18, "And in that day shall the deaf hear the words of the book, and the eyes of the blind shall see out of obscurity and out of darkness." So during that day, the deaf are going to hear the words of the book. This would have to be his word to man. "And the eyes of the blind shall see out of obscurity and out of darkness." That's always referred to in the Bible. Darkness and blindness are made synonymous with ignorance. And deafness is also synonymous with ignorance. To not hear, to not see, to not understand, or to be in darkness is ignorance. So, but in that day, he says, the deaf are going to hear, and the eyes of the blind are going to see, and they're going to come out of obscurity, that is, not being able to be noticed, or they're going to come out of darkness. "The meek also shall increase their joy in the Lord, and the poor among men shall rejoice in the Holy One of Israel." Now, the meek here means the oppressed or the unhappy. They shall increase their joy in the Lord at that time. And the poor among men, that is, the righteous poor among men, shall rejoice in the Holy One of Israel. And as we know today, the church, and this has been true all along of God's true people, the church is composed of those that are meek. That is, those that are not haughty and aggressive in the sense of trying to be obnoxious to other people. They are the ones, and the poor are the ones, that are the ones that are most apt to be called into the church today. But he said, they shall rejoice in the Holy One of Israel. And this word Holy One is capitalized. It could refer to God the Father. It could also could refer to Jesus the Messiah. "For the terrible one is brought to naught, and the scorner is consumed, and all that watch for iniquity are cut off." Now the terrible one would be the one that's unrighteous, the one that's causing trouble to God's people. The same would be true of the scorner. The Bible speaks many times of the scorner, the one who would mock, ridicule, or make fun of God's plan or God's people. And you know, it's certainly a common thing today to find those who would be classified as the scorners. You know, where is this God? When's he going to come and show himself? Or you people spend all of your time or spend a lot of your time doing something here for nothing. Or you hold such a ridiculous belief. You know, they don't stop to question, does the Bible teach it or just what God wants. It's ridicule. Just the very fact that it doesn't go along with the ideas that they've accumulated from other sources besides the Bible. But he says, "Then the scorner is consumed, and all that watch for iniquity are cut off." Now, those that watch for iniquity are those that seek opportunity to do iniquity or to do evil. And you know, there are people, and we can fall into that category ourselves, who just look for things to do that are bad. They seek opportunity for iniquity. There are certain things, you know, that are plainly described as being bad in the Bible, whether it be drunkenness or lying or stealing or whatever. But there are people who look for opportunities to do this. If they're going to see where they're going to get a little bit of time off that they can use on their own and not have to work, they may plan a party in which they're going to get drunk. And there are a lot of things this would fit. But they watch for iniquity or seek opportunity to do iniquity. He said they're going to be cut off. The terrible one and the scorner and the ones that look for this opportunity for iniquity, they're going to be cut off. And what do? He names some more things that these people do. "That make a man an offender for a word, and lay a snare for him that reproveth in the gate, and turn aside the just for a thing of naught." Now they make a man an offender for a word. That is, a word spoken against him would be used then to accuse or to condemn the person. They make him wrong just by a word that they speak about him. "Or they lay a snare for him that reproveth in the gate," and this word reproveth means to plead. Man who's pleading his cause while they lay a snare to trick him or to trap him. And it's certainly possible that in that community that they lived then and in the community we live now, we might find ourselves in circumstance in which the community would be making fun of us, in which the law or the rule or the group that makes the laws and the decisions for the community may ridicule us. We may have a just cause. We may be pleading our case in front of them. But they've laid a snare for us. That is, they've all gotten together and plotted about us and about our situation before we ever have a chance to plead our case, and we're just walking into their trap. We don't have a chance. And then he names those that turn aside the just for a thing of naught, and this thing of naught would be a vain decision. They make a decision, but it's a worthless decision. It doesn't have any power, any value, really, for the person. And they turn him aside for that decision. You know, you go a little bit against the mores of society, and you're going to find yourself in that position of having an example made of you. And whether you're right or wrong is not the question. No matter how just you may be able to plead your case, they're not listening. Well, that's the class of people he's talking about here. Therefore, thus saith the Lord, who redeemed Abraham concerning the house of Jacob, Jacob shall not be ashamed, neither shall his face now wax pale. So what he's saying here is that there's going to be some changes among my people. Those that have been the terrible ones and the scorners and that watch for iniquity, they're going to be cut off. And because of that, then, therefore, saith the Lord, who redeemed Abraham. Now, this is the same Lord now who redeemed Abraham. Describing some of the things that the Lord has done, one of the things he did was to redeem Abraham. Now, what does it mean to redeem? To redeem something means to pay a price to get it. For example, if you have a watch, or a camera, or a gun, or something, you take it down to the pawn shop and get a certain amount of money for it. Excuse me. In order for you to get your possession back, you've got to go and do what they call redeeming it. That is, you pay some money for it to get it back. And so it is for each one of us, each human being on this earth who is in a lost condition, he has to be redeemed or paid for. Well, Abraham was in that condition. Abraham lived in an area in which there was idolatry. He didn't know the true and living God. And God redeemed him. He brought him out of that place. He led him out from Ur of the Chaldees and gave him this land that he promised him. And so he redeemed Abraham. So the God, the Lord who redeemed Abraham, concerning the house of Jacob. Now here's what the Lord said about the house of Jacob, the same Lord that redeemed Abraham. Now the house of Jacob, of course, is the descendants of Jacob. Jacob shall not now be ashamed, neither shall his face wax pale. It's the same as if Jacob, who's the father of these Israelite people, it's the same as if he were able to see his descendants and see how they disobeyed God, and see how ungodly and wicked they really were, and he's ashamed of them. And this emotion of shame, and maybe even anger, this emotion has made his face turn pale. But the Lord's going to bring about change in his people. Lebanon's going to become a fruitful field, and the fruitful field is going to become a forest. And so, ultimately then, as Jacob sees his people change and be true servants of God, he's not going to be ashamed. And his face will not now wax pale. But when he seeth his children, that is Jacob, when Jacob sees his children, his descendants, the work of mine hands, in the midst of him, they shall sanctify my name and sanctify the Holy One of Jacob and shall fear the God of Israel. So this is what's going to happen. There's going to come a time when Jacob's going to see his children. He's going to see his descendants. And at that time, they're going to be in a changed condition. And they'll be the work of mine hands. Now, the work of mine hands means that they are the work of God's hands. And certainly it is true that any time we become children that are children of God, children that are sanctified and appropriate for God's use, we're going to be changed as a result of the work of God's hands. God's going to bring about some changes in us. It's not a matter of our changing ourselves to suit some way that we think is all right. It's a matter of our being changed to suit what God thinks is all right. In Ephesians 2, verse 10, speaking along this same line, Paul says, "For we are his workmanship, created in Christ Jesus unto good works, which God hath before ordained that we should walk in them." So we're his workmanship. A person who is a child of God is a person who can say, "I'm the work of his hands. He has brought about some kind of changes in my life." You're not going to say, "Well, I just accidentally fell into this and I was all right all along and didn't really know it and I discovered it and I'm really okay." That's not going to work that way. You're going to be changed. You're going to be the work of his hands. So he says here, speaking of Jacob, "But when he seeth his children, the work of mine hands, in the midst of him, they shall sanctify my name and sanctify the Holy One of Jacob and shall fear the God of Israel." So whenever these children become those that are the work of his hands and that they're at the point that Jacob's not going to be ashamed of them anymore and his face is not going to turn pale anymore, then they will be the ones who will sanctify my name. That is, they're going to take my name and set it apart and make it of a proper use. They're going to sanctify the Holy One of Jacob. This would refer to God. And shall fear the God of Israel. Here again, another term that can refer to God, or maybe one of these refers to the Messiah and one to God. And one other thing, verse 24, "They also that erred in spirit shall come to understanding, and they that murmured shall learn doctrine." Now you know, he said a little while earlier that these people draw nigh to me with their lips, they do honor me with their mouth, but their heart is far from me. They didn't have any understanding. But now he says, "They also that erred in spirit shall come to understanding, and they that murmured shall learn doctrine." So he's talking about a change in his people. Now, I believe that this partly took place among the Jewish people after the captivity, but ultimately the change here is referring to those in the church, in the church age, which we're in now, and the changes that have occurred in them, and that would include even the Gentiles. We could be classed as those that have erred in spirit, that have come to understanding, and they that murmured shall learn doctrine. Now, one thing that people might not like to admit and might not like to have to bow down to is the fact that in order to be pleasing to God, I don't care how high and mighty you are in education, I don't care how secure you may seem to be or how able you are to make a good living or whatever, in order to be pleasing to God, you must learn doctrine. You're going to have to learn his will. You're going to have to learn some things that are known as doctrine, the teaching of God. And this is the way then that they cease to be murmurers, is by learning something, by being educated. A person who's murmuring against God is an ignorant person, and he's got something to learn yet in order to get into a position where he's not going to be a murmurer. Now, beginning in chapter 30 of Isaiah,